Yes, sex is good. And this is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Stephanie Buehler is my guest, and she is an internationally recognized expert in sex and relationship therapy. Dr. Buehler has been quoted in dozens of magazines, newspapers, radio programs, television appearances. She has written so many articles for the public so that she can educate men and women and couples on making their sex lives better, whether it's due to common problems like mismatched desire or difficult problems like sexual pain. Welcome to this program, Dr. Stephanie Buehler.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well,
about my favorite topic.
Yes. Well, you're such an expert, and it's just great to have your expertise on love, lust, and laughter. And I thought we would start with some of your books. And then we'll go into sexual pain, something that I haven't discussed on this program that often. And your institute in Newport Beach deals with sexual pain quite a lot.
Yes, that's true. I'd say maybe 25% of our clients are struggling with sexual pain disorders.
25%, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even more than what I have in my practice, but... before we get into sexual pain, your website is quite wonderful, and it is for you listeners. It's thebuehlerinstitute.com, so I'm going to spell that for you, and it will also be on my description of this show right after. But it is the Buehler, B-U-E-H-L-E-R, institute.com. Very informative. And your books are on there, What Every Mental Health Professional Needs to Know About Sex. And this is a wonderful book for professionals because there are so many therapists who are not so comfortable discussing sexuality with their clients. Can you expand on that a bit, Stephanie?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the reason I wrote the book is because I kept running across, actually, clients who would come into my office and say, we went to a therapist, and when we brought up sex, the therapist put up their hands and said, oh, no, I don't do sex. And I thought, oh, my goodness, there's really a problem out there in the therapist community. You really have to be more informed and better educated in this area. And that's how I came to write that book.
Yes, I hear the same thing in my practice. That and then sometimes a therapist will try to deal with it, but not do it very well because they're not comfortable. And you have, and I know that you say that it's important, and I certainly believe this too, for the therapist to be comfortable with her own sexuality, his own sexuality, in order to deal effectively with a client and their sex problems.
That is absolutely true. Most people, I mean, therapists are just people. They're just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, nobody has been, or very few people, maybe a few fortunate people, most people aren't raised in a very sex-positive environment, don't have great sex education as they're growing up. And so, just like clients, therapists need specialized training in order to learn about their own sexuality and be comfortable. And so, for example, this September 5th and 6th, I'm very excited. We are doing our first SAR, which is a sexual attitude reassessment. It's a special event. Yeah, so that's a special event where therapists and other people in the sexuality field can come and learn about the diverse range of sexual behaviors and sexual attitudes and get in touch with their own attitudes and beliefs and discuss them with other professionals. And it's an awesome kind of event.
I did a SAR, probably 25 or 30 years ago.
Wow.
And it was useful. Because if a client comes in and they've got a, say, kinky behavior, it's not helpful to say, you do what with your hands up in the air?
Right.
That is not helpful.
Yes, exactly. No,
so that
that's
kind
not helpful.
Of exposure to all sorts of sexual expressions is really useful.
Very much so. I know when I went to my first SAR, I was exposed to things that I hadn't, not necessarily had never been exposed to, but it had been a long time since I had thought about those things and talked to anyone about those things. And it was a very good experience for me to get in touch with what I was really thinking about sex. And, I feel like every day is a SAR in my office.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
I'm yes. learning all the time.
You have other books, Sex, Love, and Mental Illness, and something that I'm thinking our listeners might be especially interested in would be A Heart-Pounding Guide to Passionate Sex. And so this is an e-book for every couple.
Yes.
So talk about that. I mean, on your website, it says that the book covers the basics of what makes sex feel good, how to communicate about sex, the role of self-knowledge about pleasure, and so on. Have your clients responded well to this book? And
yes, they have. They very much like it. It's a very, it's an inexpensive book. And I intended it to be that way so that it was very affordable. And I geared it. I don't have, many books about sex are crude. And, some people like that, but some people really don't appreciate that. So I thought, well, I'm just going to write a very straightforward kind of book, one that won't be embarrassing for anyone to read and very plain. And so, anybody from any background, I think, can read this book and enjoy it and really get something out of it, too.
So if they go to your website, they can click and order it, right?
Well, yes, they can. They can go to the website, or they can actually go on Amazon.
Okay, Amazon.
The Kindle ebook. So they can get it on Kindle and download it, have it immediately delivered, so that's always convenient.
Of course
and,
it is. And listeners, my guest, Dr. Stephanie Buehler, also holds a Master of Professional Writing. This is a degree from USC. And so she is a very good writer, and she's a friendly writer because it's understandable. She's not going to use a whole lot of jargon and things that you can understand, and it'll be very helpful. So I recommend that you go to her site, thebuehlerinstitute.com. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you happened to start to because you're a psychologist, and how did you start to specialize in sex therapy?
When I came out of school with my doctorate, that wasn't really my intention. I really wanted to work with people who had chronic illness and cancer, other kinds of medical issues. Along the way, I met an endocrinologist, and
yes.
together we started a center. And although it was rather short-lived, it was a very really wonderful setting to work in to learn about sexuality, because endocrinologists test people's hormones to try to figure out why they don't have any desire.
Yeah.
And, the endocrinologist said to me, well, it's hardly ever their hormones. It's usually something else. So maybe you want to learn sex therapy so that you can help them. And I thought, that sounds really interesting. I mean, that's very, it's relational, and it's family of origin material, and it's biological. It's got everything going. So I thought that might be a very interesting path. And as it turned out, it was a really good fit for me. I really enjoyed my my career, and intend to continue enjoying it for another decade or so. And you know, it's been very fulfilling.
Very fulfilling, because I believe our sexuality is at our core. And when our sexuality works, and when we're comfortable, and when we have happy sexual relationships, oftentimes the rest of our lives go so much better.
Yes, that is so true. And relationships feel much sweeter and closer, and people are more content.
More content, yes.
And when sexuality isn't working, when it's a struggle, I think people become depressed and anxious. They're preoccupied. They might have trouble forming a relationship or staying in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's so, you're right. That's the word. It's core to who we are as human beings.
Yes. And, but when there is shame and embarrassment and all of this complicated background, then it's up to us as sex therapists to get in there and help. And maybe this is a pretty good segue into some talk about sexual pain. And listeners, if you have a question for Dr. Stephanie Buehler, you are certainly welcome to call in 888-874-4888 and ask her a question directly. So what I have noticed, and you see more patients, clients with sexual pain than I do, but with each of these women, and sometimes it's a man, but I don't have that experience so much. It's women usually. Their stories share similar themes. They are in unconsummated relationships often on the verge of unraveling. They want children, but since they can't have intercourse, they are discouraged about conceiving, of course. And a lot of these women have lived a long time with deep pain, shame, and confusion associated with sexual pain. Is that not your experience with these clients?
Yes.
With sexual pain?
Yes. Oh, yes. That definitely describes them to mm-hmm. a T.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sad group of women,
mm-hmm.
and their partners are sad as well.
They
don't know where to turn very often. They get misinformation and misdiagnosis, and sometimes there's such embarrassment they don't even go to the doctor to try to figure it out. They just figure it's something that they just have to live with, and that isn't true. I mean, there are things that can be done to make sex more comfortable and enjoyable.
Right. And you mentioned the partners. Sometimes the partners are overlooked in this process. Not by you, not by me, but the partners often do suffer quite a lot.
Very much so.
I've had some experience with the partners developing erectile dysfunction as a result of not wanting to touch or even attempt intercourse for fear of hurting their partner.
Yes, I've seen that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes very complicated and very confusing for both partners. They really
yes.
need a lot of assistance
yes.
to figure things out.
So let's back up a little bit and let me ask you, what is sexual pain, and what is meant by sexual pain? And, I mean, we both know it's not normal, but
right.
but
yes.
what is it? Because it has many different manifestations.
Yes, that's right. So sexual pain, we use this broad term, sexual pain, to describe any time that a person, and it could be a man, but like you said, it's even in my practice, I think it's 95% women
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who experience discomfort with intercourse, with penetration.
Mm-hmm.
And that can range from very mild to, you know, maybe a 3 on the pain scale to,
mm-hmm.
you know, 10 plus. And there are different types of sexual pain. I think one of the most common is vaginismus.
Mm-hmm.
Which is when penetration is impossible. The pelvic floor muscles that surround the walls of the vagina are spasmed, and so, often women can't even use a tampon because they just, can't have any penetration. So that's one type. Another type is called vulvodynia, and there are some related disorders, and that's when there is pain around the outside of the vagina, or the area that's known as the vulva, and the vulva is, can be quite sensitive. It's very sensitive tissue. It can be inflamed. It can be a lack of hormones. It can be a lack of blood flow to the area, and a number of other things that we can get into. But that's another. And then a third is what we call dyspareunia, which you can just think of as pain with penetration.
Right.
And, that can come from a number of different things, including, for example, endometriosis.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about endometriosis, because as I understand the problem, it's not very well understood, but it is characterized by chronic, reoccurring, moderate to severe pelvic pain and inflammation. And then the endometrial growths are outside the uterus, and in some cases it does cause infertility.
Yeah. And that's a very painful condition, and we don't call that necessarily like a sexual pain disorder, but it contributes to sexual pain, and some women find intercourse at certain times of the month really unbearable. I think it's something that for some women it seems to be very difficult to treat, and I have had women in my office who've been referred here by physicians because that's what's going on. In some ways they just, unfortunately, they sometimes need to learn how to manage pain and tolerate some amount of pain if they're going to try to have children. And of course this gets very complicated. There are different ways to become impregnated, but most people want to try the natural route first, which is understandable.
Yes. And I think it's important for these women who have chronic pain to rule out other causes, such as ovarian cysts and fibroids and even irritable bowel syndrome and interstitial cystitis and other conditions. So I think this whole mind-body approach, the multidisciplinary approach, is the most effective for the patient, the client. So
yes,
I'm sure you work with doctors and naturopaths, and I do too. So they get the mind part from us and then the body part from the physician.
Right. And what I wanted to say is that many women, when they are made a referral to a therapist or a sex therapist, they think that the physician is telling them that there's something mentally wrong with you. And that's not it. It's that, the therapist can teach you and educate you in your, to understand your body. It's like, a therapist has the time to really teach someone about how their body works and about healthy sexuality and how to help manage, for example, manage the fears that come with vaginismus, fears about penetration and so forth, how to manage those fears, how to get the couple to be sexual together in an easy does it kind of way. So there are many things that therapist can help a couple with. It's not saying, you're mentally ill, you're really a mess, you need to go see somebody right away. That's not it. It's that we have a special set of skills that we can use to really relieve suffering for the woman and her partner.
I'm so glad you brought up that that distinction, because we as sex therapists do have more time. Most doctors have only 7 to 10 minutes with a patient. And I actually heard from a physician say that when his female patient started to cry, because she at the very last mentioned that she had no desire and she was perimenopausal, that he prescribed an antidepressant because he just wanted to get her out of the office.
Yeah.
And of course that compounds the problem. And these women really do need to talk to a good sex therapist who always displays a non-judgmental attitude and does, as you say, provides education in multiple forms. The good sex therapist also gives permission. And then asks the client a lot of questions about feelings. And I hope we, as sex therapists, convey realistic hope. Realistic hope. And I've seen that unfold, and I know you have, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of women who came in who, for example, had vaginismus, and, first of all, another common element to their story is that they often have gone from doctor to doctor trying to figure out what's wrong. And, you know, unfortunately, physicians don't get much training in this area. And I think it's so, you know, the women are so frustrated. And somehow, some way, they finally find their way into our offices. And, then we can make appropriate referrals to a physician. To rule out, like you said, to rule out medical problems, and also very often to a physical therapist.
Yes,
Training.
Right.
Yes, right. So
the physical therapist with pelvic floor rehabilitation training.
Yes, so the physical therapist needs specialized training as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when women do those three things, when they see the therapist, the physical therapist, the physician, things change fairly quickly. You know, in a matter of 3 to 4 months, they have healing and able to have comfortable intercourse, and along with that, heal their marriage. Because husbands, mostly they are patient, but they get to the point that they can't understand what's going on. It's so confusing to them, and they feel like just hitting their head against the wall is, how are we ever going to consummate our marriage?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I have had couples, that I've seen, maybe been married for 7 years, 10 years, and within a period of maybe 4 months, 6 months, they're able to finally consummate their marriage.
And what a relief! These women
will
say,
"What a relief!
It hurts. Sex is impossible. Every time we try, it's like hitting a wall." They'll say,
mm-hmm.
And then it's our job to uncover what is the patient really feeling when she says it hurts. So where is the pain? And, of course, as our licensing doesn't allow any kind of physical examination, but we can ask the questions and then talk to the doctor or the naturopath afterwards. So is the pain inside her vagina? And most doctors will say, listen to the patient, because she can tell you the diagnosis. Where is it?
Yes. That's true.
And to complicate matters further, when a woman retreats from contact or penetration, is she reacting from pain or from the fear associated with pain?
Right. So there's some evidence that what may happen is when, they're nervous about penetration with intercourse, and maybe unfortunately that happens on their wedding night. And we know that a lot of people are tired, they're exhausted. You know, they don't have good education. They don't know what to expect. Maybe they've heard some crazy stories from a, you know, sister or girlfriend about how awful this is going to be. And they brace themselves. You know, when you brace yourselves, everything tightens up, and that makes penetration difficult. And, you know, and the partner sometimes doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to help the woman relax and feel comfortable and, you know, have foreplay. And and so they just get into a cycle. Unfortunately, I hear stories of, you know, well, you know, we would get into bed and then he would just roll over and try to have intercourse and it would hurt. And I'm going, oh, no, that's a terrible story.
Terrible story.
That's
and
terrible.
Have you found, Dr. Stephanie, that occasionally family history may be positive for vaginismus? Especially on the maternal side, because I've asked some clients and they've noted that their mothers or grandmothers also had considerable pain with first-time intercourse.
You know, I have heard that. I've never seen any research about it.
Oh, well, I don't think there is much.
I don't think so, mostly what we've noted. Right, but I've noticed that too. Mother has said, well, you know, this may be very painful. It certainly was for me. And, you know, well, we don't know why it was painful for mother, but maybe that fear was planted by her mother in turn. You know, so we have a legacy of painful intercourse.
A legacy. So we've come to 1:30 the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more about sexual pain and what are some solutions for this problem, because this program, Lust, Love, and Laughter, is long overdue in discussing this, and we have such an expert in Dr. Stephanie Buehler. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. Yes, we hope you're coming with us. I am approaching my 5th year on Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be with PRN, and so very pleased to have expert guests like Dr. Stephanie Buehler. So we are discussing sexual pain, something that is not discussed enough, and so often women who have it suffer in silence. And At what age do women experience sexual pain? Could you talk about that, Dr. Stephanie?
Sure. It can happen at any age. It could be a young woman who's attempting intercourse for the first time with her partner, or it frequently happens to women when they get to perimenopause or menopause because hormonal changes. And, you know, tissues drawing out and getting fragile. And many women are too embarrassed to talk to their doctor about it. But really there are, even if a woman doesn't want to take hormone replacement therapy, there are topical solutions. You know, if you take, say, topical estrogen or and apply it locally to those tissues in the vulva area and in the vagina, there's not much absorption into the body, and that could be extremely helpful. And there are also vaginal moisturizers and lubricants that can be used. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, one woman in my office said, oh, it was so uncomfortable, I was biting my pillow during intercourse, and, oh, no, we don't want to have that. I mean, No woman should have to have that. So
no.
There's definitely solutions for that kind of sexual pain. And, you know, so, yeah, it could afflict a woman at any age, you know, but there are solutions, definitely.
And the woman needs to find a gynecologist, a naturopath like the one that I work with, Dr. Serena McKenzie, who's been on this program, specializes in sexual medicine. And so you need to find a medical professional who really can support this and knows what she or he is doing.
Yeah,
in
for
terms,
sure.
And a book that I like so much, it was published about 2006, Gail Sheehy's book, The Sexually Seasoned Woman. And and it's a great book. And she quotes Dr. Patricia Allen, who's in New York City, who described one patient who was in a good marriage, was perimenopausal, and started having pain with intercourse. And so she did some of the Vagifam, she did some of the topical applications, and then the way it was described in the book was that her vagina, according to her gynecologist, went from looking like a dry desert to a blooming one. It was pink and lovely again. There was more blood flow and more estrogen. And then her orgasms also came back.
Yes. Great. So, yes, just because you're, you know, getting into the good part of your life.
Yes.
And doesn't mean that you can't be sexual. So, you know, you can keep having sex and keep it comfortable as long as you wish.
Yes, and it's so important, isn't it, for most relationships to have that kind of connection, that kind of nurturing. And you've talked about sexual problems affecting a woman's self-esteem, bringing aversion to sex, avoiding sex, feeling weird or abnormal. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more based on your clients?
Yeah, so when
maybe
women,
even give us a case.
Yes, yes. So I have found that when women are unable, so I'm thinking of a particular case, and it's a very, very nice young woman who came into my office and, so embarrassed that she and her husband hadn't been able to consummate their marriage because of vaginismus. And the thing about her is that she has, I think, three or four sisters. And so the three or four sisters would, you know, when they gathered somewhere, say for, a wedding shower or something like that, they would talk about sex. And you know, they would kind of elbow her and kind of say, you know, what about you? No details, but just like, you know, hey, when you went to Las Vegas together, did you have good sex? And she would say, oh yes. And they would tease her, though, and think, oh, you know what, you're kind of prudish. And she, even with her sisters and being so close to them, she could not talk to them about the vaginismus.
There was so much shame.
Very painful for her, emotionally painful. So she did, we actually, as I recall, she did not, I get this sometimes, you know, sometimes women are so private about it and they want to know what to do. So I will, suggest using dilators sometimes that's the stepping stone to going to a physical therapist.
Yes,
My preference is that they go to the physical therapist. But, you can buy dilators over the counter, and, she used them with great success, and she was so proud of herself the first time she came in and said, you know what, I was able to use a tampon for the first time, and this is a 28-year-old woman, and so excited about that, and she felt very hopeful. She thought, well, if I can use a tampon, I'll be able to have intercourse, and she did. And, you know, that it didn't take very long. She was really motivated. She just wanted to feel, she wanted to be able to enjoy sex. She wanted to be able to have that level of intimacy with her husband, whom she really loved. And, you know, she wanted to be normal. She wanted to feel like she fit in with other women. That, you know, when she looked around, and she saw women, she would say, wow, all of them are able to have sex, and whether they enjoyed it or not, they had the experience, and I haven't, and I'm married. And it's one of the reasons I got married is to have that experience.
Exactly.
So, you know, that was
So a woman feels self-empowered when she's able to do some of these things on her own, although both you and I do suggest physical therapists, but I have gotten women to buy dildos or penis-shaped objects, even from the toy stores, that range in size from small to large. So I tell them to lube up their vagina and then start with the smallest dildo. And then once she becomes comfortable inserting that and moving it around inside her vagina, move up to the next size. And this process, it often takes several weeks, and it certainly isn't done in one night. So
But she
can control the movement of the dildo or the dilator, as they're called from the PTs, the physical therapists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if they're relaxed, and don't you find too that some of these women might be helped if they can give themselves an orgasm first, especially with partner sex?
Definitely, because that's motivational.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they can experience an orgasm, then they know that, you know, it's like another part of their body and their mind is working, is functioning and working the way it's supposed to, and it makes them feel good, and it motivates them. You know, kind of increases sexual desire, because to have all of those very frustrating experiences leads to a lack of desire.
Sure.
And, partners feel that. And a partner feels like she doesn't even want sex. It's not even that she doesn't want sex, she doesn't want me. And that is very difficult for a man to take. So,
very damaging to the relationship, in my experience.
Yes,
because it really cuts at his sexual identity, and as we said before, sometimes they develop erectile dysfunction. But a colleague of mine, and you probably know him, but I won't say his name on the air, said, "Men are their cocks." You know, they're very much identified with their penises. And if they can't use them for pleasure, and it's only for pain, that's devastating. It's devastating for the man, and it's devastating for the woman often.
Definitely. And I think that there's a stereotype that runs true, which is, you know, women need love in order to have sex. Well, men
yes.
have sex in order to feel loved.
Yes.
And I think there's some truth to that. And
lots
so
of truth.
They, mm-hmm, and the men end up feeling unloved.
Unloved.
And it's really, I mean, it's very tragic to me
when
these cases show up in my office. Or I'm sure that's true for you as well.
Absolutely. But often there, if they hang in long enough with the therapy, which is multidimensional. So the physical therapist often, who specializes in pelvic floor, and the talk therapy, which we provide, and then working with the physician or the naturopath. So it's multi-dimensional approach, and if they hang in and do the work, they often do get better.
Yes, definitely. There really is hope for these women and their partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a few who came in because they wanted to get pregnant, and lo and behold, they did.
Right.
So, you know, and that's the best. I mean, the very best is when I get a photograph of a baby, and they say, "Thank you."
I know.
Oh my goodness!
Talk about job satisfaction.
Yes.
You know it. I often count my blessings, and I bet you do too, you know, when you really love what you do and know that it matters and know that you're good at it, how could anything possibly be more meaningful or fun?
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
I, I do too. I count my blessings all the time.
Yes. See, people out there listening, they want sex therapists like us who are passionate about our work and knowledgeable, of course.
Yes, that's
yes.
true.
So I want to talk about...
it takes a lot of training. That's the thing, you know?
Oh, yes. And you provide training, too. So if there are any therapists listening, and we started off the top of the show with this, one of your books.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you offer a lot of training. Maybe you could just elaborate on that a little bit more. We did at the beginning of the show, but...
Yeah, so I do have a background as an educator. I actually, mm-hmm. I was an elementary school teacher for a decade. So I don't, you know, that's kind of a strange transition from elementary school teacher to a sex therapist.
You know, but, that's how I began too. I didn't do it for
really?
A decade.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I think, you know.
Relating to little kids and is
yes,
good.
Right.
That kind of communication.
Yeah, absolutely, and being able to explain things to people in a way that they can really
mm-hmm.
absorb it and use it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of being a sex therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy teaching and training, and so we've put on some free lectures here at the Institute. So if there are therapists listening who are in Southern California, you can get on our mailing list and find out. We'll be starting those up again in the fall. And then I'm starting a year-long training program. It's 1 week and a month for 10 months, and you're going to get all of your educational requirements if you're looking for certification through ASET,
mm-hmm.
Which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, which is how Dr. Diana and I met.
That's right.
And then I'll be having a distance learning program.
And I like how you describe that. I like how you describe that on your website, and distance learning and all of the particulars. So anybody can go there, any professional, and find out what that's all about. You describe it very well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it will be... You know, I don't want it to be a very just a static program where you download a PDF and take a
mm-hmm.
quiz. That's just too boring. I can't,
mm-hmm.
I don't like doing that. I'm not going to inflict that on anyone.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm.
Well, you've had enough training throughout the course of your professional life that you know what works and what doesn't work. In terms of being on the receiving end, right?
Definitely.
So.
Yes, that's true. I've definitely been on the receiving end of a lot of coursework.
Yes.
And, you know, most great. Most
right.
Great.
Most of it is great. And of course, we have to maintain our CEs, our continuing education credits. So we show up at ASEC conferences. And Quad S conferences, Quad S being Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality. And I really love doing all of these conferences. I think off the air we said, you know, now that we are more seasoned therapists, we learn a little less at these conferences because we've been exposed to so much. But, well, my experience is that I still learn. I just don't learn quite as much.
Right, but we also, we network.
And that's so important. I'm glad you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Networking.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're on the program today. I was networking.
That's right.
With you.
That's right. Yeah.
And I hope that I can have you back again because you are so knowledgeable and there's so many things we can talk about. For instance, you mentioned before you decided to be a sex therapist that you wanted to help people with medical problems, and you help women who have breast cancer, and breast cancer and sexuality, or any kind of cancer and sexuality, is another very difficult area because these women often feel so diminished and their body image is all awry, and there's so many issues around it. Can you just talk a little bit about that for a moment, sex and cancer?
Yes. Absolutely. Well, you know, women, we'll focus on women with breast cancer,
they're often given tamoxifen. Tamoxifen just absolutely shuts down the production of estrogen, and you go into menopause, and, you know, that's really, I mean, it's no fun to go into instant menopause, and, you know, at the, they experience vaginal dryness and problems with orgasm and loss of desire, and then, you know, they can have scarring, and, you know, they're just, you know, really struggle after treatment for breast cancer. And, but, you know, again, there are things that women can do. I mean, they can certainly, there, again, you know, there are topical solutions, I guess, topical things, moisturizers and so forth that can be used. Even olive oil, I've heard of olive oil being used as a lubricant. Of course, you check with your physician before you do any
right.
of that.
And coconut oil.
Treated. Coconut oil and, you know, so forth. And then, you know, what I really try to talk to survivors of cancer about is, you know, thinking about intimacy and not, you know, if they don't have the energy for a full-on intercourse, to, you know, engage in a lot of affection, to be, you know, to do kind of lighter sexual activities that don't require as much energy. So, you know, to fondle one another and stroke one another, caress one another, and to enjoy that. And you know, it takes some of the pressure off of having to really step up to the plate and, you know, have a great sexual experience.
The bottom line is to encourage our clients to enjoy their sexuality in other ways besides just intercourse.
Exactly, exactly. That's very well put. And also, I think the other thing, too, is that for partners of cancer survivors, don't be afraid to bring up the topic, you know, and have the conversation. But also, you need to maybe adjust your expectations of, you know, what's going to be realistic, at, you know, especially at the beginning stages of survivorship. And, so, you know, couples who were, you know, had a good sex life before the cancer diagnosis generally will return back to having some kind of sex life, you know, it might not look like what it once did, but they're okay with that. Like, you know what, okay, well, hey, this is how we can have sex now, and that's great that we can. But for other couples where things weren't so, you know, were just kind of so-so before, this really, you know, it really creates a struggle for them. And often they don't even know how to talk about what has happened. And so that's where, again, you know, being able to go in to see a sex therapist, not because, oh, you're, you know, you've had cancer, now you're, you know, there's mental illness there. You go because...
Or you're doomed to a sexless marriage forever.
Yes, right. You know, but it, you know, it's a place where a conversation can be facilitated.
Yes.
You can get guidance from a professional who can help you figure out how to talk about what's going on now and how to make things better. And, you know, those are very satisfying cases to work with because they, you know, they usually learn more than they thought they would learn.
Exactly right.
From coming to the office. They get a different perspective on sexuality. And like you said, you know, sex is more than just having intercourse. And it's, you know, having all, like experiencing all of your senses and, you know, having intimate conversation and saying nice things to one another and admiring each other and, you know, all of the things that go along with having a good, satisfying, intimate relationship.
Exactly. And do you give your clients occasionally sensate focus homework or caressing exercises or some version of that where intercourse, even if they can have it, is not allowed for the first few times where they're, it's basically erotic massage, as you know.
Yes, right.
Yes.
So definitely give sensate focus exercises, mm-hmm. you know, the graduated touching exercises.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I give them lists of things to do, what we might call outer course, you know, ways mm-hmm. to caress and touch each other,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that don't necessarily require penetration. And actually, I give those to couples where there's been sexual pain, you know, so that they have something that they can do if they want. They don't
right.
always want to right away, but, you know, give some suggestions of ways to please each other physically while they're waiting for the vaginismus to resolve. That can be very helpful.
My experience in working with the vaginismus couples is that sometimes they, and I've had a few very young couples where they waited till their wedding night and they were both virgins, and sometimes there are religious considerations in these cases. But anyway, so by the time they come to see me, they've developed a pretty good sex life without intercourse.
Yeah.
And so their repertoire often includes oral sex and lots of touching and lots of kissing and lots of breast play. And so sometimes they're ahead of the couples that just are fairly penis-centric, you know, and
right.
penis and vagina. And so... because they've explored these other things and they have other ways of bringing each other pleasure.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, right. Some are very imaginative.
Uh-huh.
And, and have lots of sex, actually. It's kind of surprising sometimes. Like, oh, okay, well, way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Way ahead of many couples who come into the office. So, you know,
So I had a successful couple leave my office just 3 days ago, and she had had vaginismus and went for physical therapy, and they've been married for 6 years and want to have a baby, and there was finally success.
Yay.
And yeah, and it of course that's a wonderful thing, and one of the things that we discussed is until she gets more used to him. So we have shallow thrusting as opposed to deep thrusting. And
yeah.
And that can be important. And just putting the head of the penis into the vagina, not the whole penis, until she gets used to an actual penis as opposed to a dilator or a dildo.
Absolutely. Right. That's
mm-hmm.
very empowering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good thing to tell her, you know, go at your own pace, and you don't have to, like, have full penetration right away.
Mm-hmm.
It can be gradual.
Mm-hmm. Be gradual. Well, Dr. Stephanie, we're coming to the end of the program. I just wanted to say, and love your response to this, that in our culture, sexual pleasure is still, in some areas, a dangerous commodity with dangerous overtones. It's for some, it's the first thing we toss overboard during life's various storms. And I think we forget that it's as much a part of us as the need to eat and breathe.
Yeah.
don't you agree? I mean, we're in the field because we know how important sexuality is.
Yes. Yeah, right. When you don't have sex in your life, if it's something that you want and you don't have that in your life, it makes life very dreary. So it's an important part of life satisfaction and happiness.
Yeah. So I'm hearing the music. That means that I want us to wind this up. Thank you, Dr. Stephanie Buehler.
Oh, thank you.
What a wonderful guest you are. I hope I can entice you back to this program for a part two.
Of course.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And listeners, next week I'll be back with Ross Rosenberg. And just listen in and you'll hear us talking about lots of things. Bye, everybody.